Nick Begich with us, of course, as we talk about his incredible work and the work he's doing in the future. So we'll be back with your calls in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you along with Nick Begich. We'll take your calls this hour. Mind Control is one of his DVDs. Is that what we're going through now, Nick, with this COVID situation, Mind Control?
You know, at a certain point, you got to say, everybody remembers it was over a year ago. This was a two-week deal, right? And here we are. And I would say to a certain extent, I would agree with that. You know, there was a paper done, and I know many have cited it. I did quite a while ago, and it was the one from 2011 Rockefeller Foundation, that planning document, you know, about what would you do if, and, you know, and here we are with mm-hmm. the what if, and it all is right in front of us.
If it's happening.
And this is the important part of all of it. You know, at the end of the day, what do we want to have? Are we going to just accept that we all are in kind of a perpetual lockdown? I don't think so. I don't think people are going to do that. That's not what human beings do.
They're rebelling now.
Yeah, and this is the thing about that is, without getting, you know, saying on one side or the other, the thing that's happened here is nobody trusts the news and no one trusts the government and no one trusts any of these institutions because they're not trustworthy. And that's the problem, right? Because people have been behaving badly so long and so long in the wrong way that people don't know who to trust within that
Correct.
Mass. And so really, from my perspective, first understanding how people are manipulated by all of this becomes a kind of a veil to remove, you know, and privacy, there isn't any. And as I said, you know, when you look at what Cambridge Analytica did with 60 government selections, not just in the U.S., but, you know, they influenced 60 governments around the world. And just because they may not exist in the same form, all of that technology certainly does, and it's being applied even more vigorously because it works. And the thing about data that isn't well understood, and we tried to talk about this now over 20 years ago, is eventually by not doing anything, then we have a problem. And now we do, because there's no real understanding. In the Congress, as an example, there's nobody there who can go into a closed hearing, which are private. You can't go in, no staff, you can't take notes, you can't discuss what happens there, they're classified. But when you put a bunch of people in a room who don't have the science background or the multi-platform backgrounds to ask questions, the kind of questions you need to ask to penetrate an issue, who's gonna watch, who's watching? Nobody. There's a few MDs in the Congress, maybe a couple of engineers, but the rest of them, you know, might as well be a bunch of used car salesmen when it comes to the technology they're supposed to be evaluating. The stuff that can change the world, you know, the stuff that people ought to be asking some deep questions about, like, why are all these UFOs flying around the Navy's talking to us about now?
Mm-hmm.
You know, as exactly. a good example, you know, and I've been to all those conferences years ago. I used to be invited when the other guys ran those in Laughlin every year. And I met all those guys. I got to know all those guys. And what I see now is, yeah, of course they're going to start talking about it because they want to scare the hell out of people again, you know, for stupid reasons. You know, the reality is, if you think we're the only ones when you look up in the sky and see innumerable universes in the sense of galaxies, and I mean, you look at the universe and you go, what, how big is it? You know, we're not even, we're a grain of sand on a grain of sand on a grain of sand on the beach of it all. And yet we think there's shortage, we think there's a lot of things that just simply aren't true. And we buy into it. And I mean, even the idea of shortage, you know, the idea that economics runs on this whole thing of supply and demand, like mm-hmm. there's a shortage. Today, in what technologies have yielded, and this is a big part of my whole research is technology, it's a few people that are blocking, a few institutions that are blocking the possibilities right now that ought to be available. That's inhumane. We have solutions. You know, when you think about Xerox machines, as they were called once upon a time, making a copy and how miraculous was. Imagine 3D printing with DNA applicable to you of your organs. You know, so you get a new liver when yours wears out that's your own, from your own cells. You know, this is a technology that's literally at our doorstep right now. We have, between the nanotechnologies, biotech, what's going on in electronics, within the energy sector, when you start looking at where we are sitting right now and the opportunities in front of us right now to have abundance in a world that screams shortage, this is, again, we're looking at this wrong, and we're looking at ourselves wrong, starting with that, and limiting ourselves and everybody feeling like we're worthless and unworthy, and that is not true. It is simply not true. The science doesn't say that, and certainly no philosophy that I've ever read of any depth says that, unless it's something you really don't want to be dabbling in. And the reality of what we have is we are the creators. Everything we see around us that we think is a problem, collectively and individually, we made choices that brought us here. We can change that
and
not allow a few to do it for us.
Let's take some calls for you. Thomas in La Jolla, California. You're on with Nick Begich, Tom.
Hi, George. Thank you for accepting my call. Nick, it's always, always such a pleasure to hear your interviews on Coast. Comment and then a question. In my opinion, it seems that we are preparing for a Arctic Circle Cold War. And it seems like if you look at a globe and you look down upon the North Pole, you'll see northern Canada, Alaska, Siberia, Scandinavia, Iceland, Greenland, etc. And it seems like there's this, I call it an Arctic Circle Cold War that is under the radar, that is heating
up. You're right. But it's not under the radar. It's under what used to be the dew line, which was the radar. We've been in that Cold War since the end of World War II here. We've had jets coming into our airspace for this whole time. I grew up next to Elmendorf. They used to scramble the jets all the time. We had a Nike missile site, all this underground stuff right outside Anchorage here, still there. You know, all this is because this is strategic, ladies and gentlemen. And when you look at the Arctic, Arctic is 25% of undiscovered hydrocarbons. Look at what's everything north of the Brooks Range in Alaska is an oil basin. An oil basin, ladies and gentlemen, and the Northwest Passage is opening up, and they're moving freight through that because it's easier and it's faster and it's cheaper than the Panama Canal, and that's what they're doing as Arctic ice moves out, and it is, and it's diminishing every year, and it is, and it has been actually for 12,000 years because where I'm standing right now, only 4,000 years ago, there were 6,000 feet of ice. That's not very long ago. So, you know, global warming's been happening. The Arctic is definitely, the Chinese have made their presence known. Finally, they're building some icebreakers, but I'll let you know something about that. Because of the Jones Act and because of the maritime industry and the shipbuilders, what we have is a situation where China can build icebreakers for about 15, 20 cents. Not even that, probably a dime on the dollar or less. And so what we're competing with is, you know, people say, well, they're only spending, you know, a 60, 80, 100 billion maybe on military, and we kind of laugh and snicker. Well, when you get 10 to 15 times more, it matters, you know. And yeah, they're moving in the Arctic, and they have a deal with Russia because Russia's got a declining population, and Russia's not our enemy. I would say that real loud. The people to watch is China because philosophically where they're at is way different. And I spend a lot of time in different parts of Russia and the old republics, and it's not so well reported or accurately reported on.
And Tom had a question for you too, Dick. Go ahead, Tom.
Yes. Wow, you've really answered that very well. Do you see in the next 20 years that things will be heating up between China, Russian Federation, the United States, Canada, European Union? And it seems, I'll give you an example, Nick. You know, we think of HAARP as aimed to the southern, to the south, but I've often felt like maybe HAARP was aimed to the North Pole and to that Arctic Circle region. And anyway,
that's all right. Yeah, exactly right. Because you want to intersect the magnetic lines for certain applications in the north, because then you use them as waveguides, and the energy is cyclotron resonances create. So it kind of creates a corkscrewing effect. It flows from north to south. It creates a shield for intercontinental ballistic missiles, or maybe UFOs, or maybe something else. You know, and China built some, and Russia has. Russia pioneered these, or the old Soviet Union, and everyone has developed some aspect of this technology. Now the thing about it is, there's a lot of ways to get there. It's not just with these facilities. And the thing about HARP as a technology is, it was like, for me, kind of the gateway one that I looked at, and then from there you kind of unknot this sweater of technology, and you realize that it was, again, a grain of sand on the beach of bad news in certain respects, and in another's interesting science. And Ben Eastland, the inventor, you know, he saw it as a two-edged situation, and he was right. And I knew Ben. He was a good guy. But, you know, military doesn't always do what you think they're going to do with what you invent. And that's been sort of the way it goes. I'm sure the Wright brothers weren't figuring on dropping bombs out of their planes initially, but, you know, things happen. And with all technologies, they're two-edged. You know, they can make us a better world, or they're used for other purposes. And this is what the problem has become when you start to look at what makes countries powerful today. It's their technology, ultimately. And so governance means you better know something, and you better have it widely reported accurately, and it's not being reported. The things that are the most important for the 21st century, our Congress doesn't understand, and most of the public doesn't either. And how these things connect together, we don't understand well either, because we compartmentalize everything. And the way the USSR kept up, was the first paper I ever did in science. I was 19 years old, and it was on the contrast of Russian versus Western, predominantly American, compartmentalization versus Russian, or USSR at that time, generalization. They put everyone together in the sciences and other areas to cross-fertilize and come up with creative ideas. That's how they kept up with us.
Let's go to Mayat in the city of New York. Hi, Mayat.
Yes, good morning, gentlemen. Love your work, Nick. Your voice sounds so great and just strong. And keep strong. I have, my usual three-part, although George asked the first one around your thoughts on COVID. So I'll first ask you your thoughts on our social situation. People who get hooked on Facebook no longer seem to have normal friendships and conversations over the phone. I mean, the digital world seems to be snowing us in. I came across in the Week magazine, hadn't known about something called the Social Survey. Like to know if you're familiar with it. It was a piece excerpted from The Atlantic, and it said that when people no longer trust each other, which is, we were getting very low ratings in that area, that societies tend to unravel. And I'd also like to know, a couple years ago, this big, I won't mention his name, but billionaire, a hedge fund guy came on 60 Minutes, and he said he was very concerned about the inequality of the country. And Princeton did a study a few years ago saying we're heading toward an oligarchy. And lastly, I want to know your thoughts on artificial intelligence. I mean, it seems like we're on the precipice. 60 Minutes had a piece on Boston Dynamics, I think it's called. And have you seen those robots? And I'll listen over the air. And thank you. Love you for your work. Thank you, George.
All right. Go ahead, Nick. Well, take what you can.
Okay, first on the social media a part of that. I totally agree. Way too much time on machines. And this has been part of this lockdown situation. Even if you feel you need to be separated, at least get outside and talk to people. And if you feel you need to have that distance, then do it. But people need to be with people. This is not the way we're meant to socialize. And the other thing you're doing when you're on those media is you're giving up all your data. And all that information, after 3,000 bits of information, they can tell more about you than someone that lived with you for 20 years, according to the data I've read. And they can predict what you're going to do better than you can. So if you want to give up your privacy in that manner, because then what they do is only send you people who advertise and promote, because your social survey is really your scoring mechanism to say, well, how valuable is this consumer? Because you're the one who's being bought and sold as a commodity online for your time. It's about holding your time and then selling ads. And that's all it's about. So the more time you give it, the more you feed it. And the more it works for that purpose, to get you to look at only one channel, yours. And what happens is it always sends you only feedback that's oriented towards whatever you're looking at. So you never broaden your horizons. Like the way you used to approach media is you went and you looked at it and people gave you two sides and you kind of had to dig it out. But now it's tailored just for you. So you only see what will maybe agree with you.
That's
so
right.
100 issues with a politician, you'll see the one that agrees with you and not the 99 you might not agree with.
What do you think of AI, Nick?
AI side is, I've watched that emerge and where that's headed. And the coding that artificial intelligence now creates is so complex we can't even decode it. So, you know, this will tell you where we're headed. Now, you mix that with quantum computing, then we have danger all over the map. Because quantum computing, take the biggest computer in the world today and run it for a trillion years, and a quantum computer will do the same thing in 1 hour. This is serious business, because 1 second of the modern computer would be everybody on the planet doing a calculation every minute for 60 hours. For 1 second of the modern computer, and imagine that running for 60, that running for a trillion years, a quantum computer does that in an hour. Boom! All the encoding, all the encryption goes away, everything goes away, and AI runs the show and decides what's going on. I don't like that. Because that's what quantum computing, the leap will happen. And whoever gets there first, and some say someone's already there, I don't know, but we're close. And it will change everything about everything, because predictability modeling will become like 99.9. But remember, it's that little bit that you don't get that screws it up. And this is when man plays God with his technology. And we're right there, you see. And so the value system that we apply to our technologies and our wisdom, if any, is going to matter. And because there's a lot of wisdom, a lot of knowledge that's been held for lots of self-centered, selfish reasons, kind of a agreements between powers that be, whether it be religious organizations through all the different cultures and centuries, or whether it be governments in collusion with those organizations, you know? And if you look back on kingdoms and the way everything kind of ran, and you look at things and how they run, you got to ask yourself some questions about all these institutions. And then you got to say, well, what do we do to reestablish them, or do we do something a bit different? And I think we do something a bit different, but we don't abandon systems. We recognize where they're flawed and where we're being played with a little differently. And that's where I think a little different view, the oligarchy. Yeah, we're headed there. Look at all the small businesses are never going to come back. And who are the winners? And your questions are answered. And who would like to keep that power, not give it up? The winners. And it's easy to figure out who they are. And what we've transferred is another huge amount of wealth. We did the SNLs when we bailed them out. We did the banks a couple times, bailed them out. And you know, it's the... What are we doing, you know, on a lot of this?
Hold on, Nick. We're at the bottom half. We're going to come right back and take final calls on Coast to Coast AM. On our next Coast to Coast program, astrologer William Stickevers joins us to talk about some world events, followed by Seth Shostak from SETI, Search for Extraterrestrial Intelligence. That'll tell you everything you need to know about what Seth will be talking about. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie back with you, along with Nick Begich. Nick, tell folks where they can tune in to you on April 1st in a couple days.
All right. The best place is hook up through earthpulse.com and our new website, which is www.thehiddenmonks.com. Thehiddenmonks.com. And that'll get you hooked up with us. And what I'm going to do beyond that 10-hour feed is kind of the overview, and then I'm going to do a regular once a month. I'm going to do three.
Oh, are you? Okay,
I'm
cool.
Dump it onto the YouTube.
Is this the new Nick Begich or what?
Yeah, and I'm going to try and do a more in-depth teaching on these things, with solutions always embedded in, where I really get to give a thorough answer, you know, on a lot of this. And there's so much complication in the world today, and I think that's the biggest part of the problem, is the complexity, and who has time to sort it out, you know? And I have taken the time over a lifetime, but how I want to handle that information is a bit differently, because it's so easy to get lost in, like, one issue as being the problem. And actually, if people can just get a little bit of what's possible and see some solutions out there, that's how you create a different kind of wave. And the wave right now, what we're doing with our emotion, because here's the magic. I mean, if you want to talk about the metaphysics, it's about that. And it's the idea that emotional energy combined with thought and ideas and then spoken word with intention is how reality gets created on every level. And the more you know that, the more you experience that, the more powerful that becomes. And so kind of providing some ways to see how does that work, you know, and we store all our experience and emotions and thoughts in our storage system of our experience, or our storage system of our ego, if you will. And our awareness kicks in every once in a while, but not very often. Usually the storage system runs everything. And here's a good example is when anger grabs somebody, like it almost feels like it's got you by the shirt and it's dragging you around the room. But as soon as you notice it, pay attention to it, it stops, because that's your awareness. You're the observer now looking at this, and you stop it immediately. That's how you control emotions. And if you just practice that simple one, that's another key I'll teach. Simple one. You just have to pay attention when you're having an emotional experience, whether it's love, empathy, or hate and anger. Because whatever you're experiencing, you're feeding. You should pay attention and know what you're doing. Then you know what you're doing, and you're doing it deliberately. Now you're in control of yourself again. And this is, you know, you see what happens, how you feed the beast with resonance. Here's a math formula, X plus X in brackets, you square it, meaning it's more than the sum. It's like two or more gathered together. You get way more out of it than you put in it. This is resonance. And so anger and hate works the same way. You send it to the guy that sent it to you, and it goes up, it's not two, it's four. You know, you start doubling it up every time you rotate it through. So that isn't what you want to do. That's feeding the beast, if you will.
Back to the calls, okay?
Let's do it.
Let's go to Bill, truck driving in California. Hi, Bill. Go ahead.
Hey, George. Hey, Nick. I understand if you don't have an opinion on this, because I lived in Alaska. Alaska's a huge place, okay? And like George had a guest on a couple of weeks ago that was talking about the Pacific Ocean. It's the largest geographic mass on the face of the earth. But there's this story that keeps going in the media every now and again about Mount Cleveland in the Aleutian Islands, okay? And I have more than a passing interest in geology. But they keep saying that under the very active Mount Cleveland, there is a caldera larger than Yellowstone. I'm like, now, wait a minute. Did I hear that right? I mean, because that is really quite remarkable. And yeah, I was wondering if you have any opinion on that.
Yeah, look at the whole Aleutian chain is a 2,000-mile long volcanic chain, all of it. And if you look at that, look at the Google Maps showing under the sea, and look at the trench that's alongside of it, how deep that is. This is all active, and there's always volcanoes going off. And nobody hears about it because nobody lives out there hardly at all, and it doesn't make any news feeds anywhere. So, you know, we have this happen pretty frequently. You know, when you start thinking about these things, you know, when you talk about climate change and global warming, you know, a lot of people don't realize there's thousands of undersea volcanoes, and when they go off, 100% of the energy is absorbed in the oceans and spreads around just like a plume. Just like what you see on those maps of heat. But when heat comes from the sun or the atmosphere, most of it's reflected away. It never gets absorbed, and it doesn't account for anything that they show you in terms of heat retention in the oceans. It's from the undersea volcanics. So what's happening above, remember, 3/5 of the world is under the seas, and we're not paying very close attention.
Next up, let's go to David in your neck of the woods, Anchorage, Alaska. Hi, Dave. Go ahead.
Hello, gentlemen. How are you tonight?
Okay, Davey. Thank you.
Oh, I could. I'd like to stay here for an hour. you know, Nick, I want to wrap this all up. My name's my moniker for Coast to Coast was Downtown Dave, and I didn't know how well I was known until years later talking to Coast listeners. And you know, the Jewish rabbis teach there's no such thing as a coincidence. And Nick, I remember. Do you remember showing a young carpet layer your transcripts for Angels Don't Play This Harp back in 95?
Yeah, when I was building my house. Yeah, right. Yeah. Right on. Yeah, no kidding. Yeah, no kidding.
Yeah, it's been a long time, Nick, since we've seen each other. But you know what? That visit really embedded me into the whole DNA Coast to Coast informative network that was out there. And I played my own part trying to influence people and make this world better. So I want to thank you.
Well, right on. Right on. You know, that's right on. And, you know, I appreciate that, Dave, because, you know, this is the thing people don't get. Every one of us do this stuff. And you don't know which thing makes the difference. You know, it might be once walking down the street and smiling at someone who was going to blow their brains out and then doesn't, and they go cure cancer or some other disease. Who really did that? Was it the guy that smiled on them that they decided, oh, I'm not going to do that after all? Someone cares about me? I mean, it can be that simple. And we keep underestimating who we are in the world, and we make a difference. And we don't even know what it is, and we're never going to know until we hop to the other side. Then we're all going to go, wow, how did that happen? You know, and we'll figure it out there. But all I can say is people need to lift more and not try the impossible. Do what is possible that we can do each day. And, man, this thing can be a chain reaction.
Absolutely.
All we do is that.
And, David, you had a question? Go ahead.
I got several things I could. I'm just going to listen real fast because I don't want to take all your time. One, your comments on the trumpet sounds, metallic sounds we've had in Anchorage in 2012 and then big time in the fall of 2019. I visited HARP a couple of years ago, and the propaganda that the University of Alaska was spewing at the end of it was something else, Nick. I wish I could tell you the questions were asked were rather elementary. I'd also like you to talk about COVID, and I know you're into electric healing. And I'd like to know, with COVID, many doctors in Europe and Italy said it's a virus on a bacterium. My opinion that it's misdiagnosed. And the government could have given away vitamins, ACD, zinc, ivermectin, and hydroxychloroquine at a stadium drive-through sites and pop-up clinics and churches nationwide. They could have done that, but they didn't. So I could have all kind of questions for you, but just comment on that. And also, is HARP tied into 5G towers at all?
Okay. In terms of its current on HARP, I couldn't answer that one. But on the
trumpets,
Anchorage, some of that, you know, I read about it, you know, and I was in Anchorage, but I never perceived it. But I know that it happened here.
Sounds biblical, doesn't it?
Yeah, it was weirdness, you know, and I don't know what the cause of that was, but it was very strange, and it was widely reported. On the healing using electromagnetic fields, absolutely, there's some really good work in this area, both using of all different kinds. Sometimes it's I've seen light therapies using class 4 lasers of different kinds and different bandwidths. I've seen a lot of things in that space, and there's a lot in using electric current through acupuncture. In fact, we'll even show some of that in the thing I'm going to be doing on the first. And you know, all of this technology, when you see it, the things on healing actually, the way we approach is a bit wrong, whether it be COVID or any number of things. A lot of it is kind of outside in, and actually things happen inside out. And the biophysics is where the real action is. This is where you understand what's going on energetically and how that affects chemistry or atoms and molecules, and then how that manifests in conditions of health. And this is where the science is going into electromedicine, and that's really an exciting area for everything. And again, one of these areas is there's lots of things that are not being widely reported that have huge potential across the spectrum of healing. And I've met many, many people in this, in biophysics at the very, very top of their game throughout the world.
Well, next up, Joe in the Bronx. Hey, Joseph, go ahead.
George, how are you?
All right, Joe, thanks.
Good. Nick, what do you think the end result of the COVID pandemic will be and its effect on society going into the future? And do you believe that that there are many pandemics to follow?
Okay, good question. Yeah, there probably will be. And, you know, the one that I was concerned might eventually be a problem was Ebola. And I think a lot of people were talking about that for good reasons. But this, here's what I know about this. And there's conspiracy theories and all of that about these kinds of things. But our government and all governments have a playbook for everything that could possibly happen. I mean, from flying saucers landing on the White House to pandemics. And what happens when they come and they have them, and private parties do too, big corporations, big organizations, people who, multi-generational families that have a thousand-year history and remember what's going on. You know, what happens, they pull their playbook off the shelf and they execute. They don't think, oh, now what do we do? No, that's not how this works. I've met some of the futurists that build out those models, and they work for months and months with teams of hundreds to play these, kind of game it out. What if? What if we had a famine? What if we had flying saucers? What if we had a disease? What would happen? What if we had compound events, like we had the disease and then we had an economic crash? Oh, my. Well, they've already done all that planning, so what you see is the execution. Now, why does things get delayed? Those are good questions. Others didn't delay. China pulled their playbook off the shelf and did their thing, and so did Russia, and so did Israel, and so did everybody else. I think we pulled a playbook off the shelf. Whose was it? But this is the deal. Is I have multi-generational history in government, and that's what matters, because otherwise people forget. And what people need to remember is the system that's evolved has evolved over time. Parties aren't as important at the high levels. What's important is making sure you have people move in a direction, pushed along. And with the technologies of today, it's easy.
Let's go to Joe in Long Island. Hey, Joseph, go ahead.
Yeah, I just want to ask you, Nick, how do you self-evaluate when you're doing a leapfrog into unfamiliar territory? Example would be the Wright brothers, all right? They were working as individuals on the bicycles, and they leapfrogged into aerial flight. So that's unfamiliar for them. How do you keep that self-evaluation at a personal level going into something that's
all I've ever done my whole life. I've had like six full careers when I go through this thing. People will hear about it, but I think that's, you have to be curious, you have to be interested, you have to pursue that. Learning never ends. I mean, if it does, then yeah, you'll never see it outside of your own box. And so you have to pursue a broad range of thoughts and ideas. I think that's exciting, and for me, I have a picture on the wall, the one that I want, that I hang up to remind me of who I am, you know. And it was when I was two, and I'm sitting on a pile of books, and I'm reading some
at 2 years old.
At two, and you know, so I mean, that's what I've been doing. You know, what have you been doing lately? Well, I'm 62 now, and I've been doing that, you know. And so, when I think about it, and I was raised by two teachers who went on to do a bunch of things, and so without limits, not seeing limits, not understanding what limits were in that sense, in terms of what we could do as individuals. I actually believed in all that. And because I did believe it, I could do it. So can you. So can everyone. We just have to remember what these foundational ideas are again, just a little bit, and then some simple ways to start maybe waking up our own curiosity and quit being pushed around by everything that takes our time.
What drives you, Nick? What pushes you?
You know, what it really is because I'm doing what I love the most. I live a livelihood. I don't have a job. What I do is a livelihood. I love what I do now, and I have for a long time, most of my life. Every once in a while, I had to take an intermission and do something that maybe wasn't my first choice, but I always made it my best choice for the moment, and I learned everything I could, and I met. And I thrive on relationships and friendships because I know that's the only thing of real value. This is how we share our time with each other. I mean, coming on the show with you, with the team that's behind all this.
Going on 18 years, Nick.
Yeah, and you know, and then I think about all the people that dial in and work with us and then take these ideas and do something. this is why I do it, is I know we're making a difference. And the 500 messages I got the other day just touched my heart. And where am I? I want to do this through a YouTube channel for free live, and I still need 300 people to sign up to make that happen.
Oh, you'll get it just from our audience, my friend.
I know we will, because it's always been there. And what I want to do is more teaching, more expression of, hey, we don't have to quit on ourselves, and we don't have to quit on our nation or the world. We can do this elegantly, like the way it was planned in the beginning, 250 years ago, when we figured out that we could break away from this in this country, on this continent, that we could de-chain ourselves from the things.
Well, you've done a great job telling us, Nick, to be sure. Thank you again, Nick Begich. Website linked up at coasttocoastam.com. Don't forget April 1st, his event on YouTube. Just go to his website, earthpulse.com. For Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Latasseur, Stephanie Smith, Chris Boros, Tim Banal, Ian Punnett, and George Knapp, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.